now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Once again, everyone, I'm Ray Shasho. Welcome to the show where we interview legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Two-time Grammy Award winner Corey Glover, who is best known as the lead singer for the platinum-selling band Living Color, has announced that he will be performing a series of exclusive solo shows to celebrate the 20th anniversary of his debut album, Hymns. The East Coast tour kicks off April 21st in Buffalo, New York, and is scheduled to run through June, stopping in such cities as Rochester, New York, my hometown of Baltimore, Maryland, and more. According to Glover, fans can expect to hear songs from his first solo release, as well as the unexpected covers that his shows have become known for. Hymns was released in the spring of 1998, and many fans and critics believed it truly showcased Glover's versatility as a singer and songwriter, with its intricate mix of rock, folk, soul, and even gospel. One of Glover's proudest pieces of work, he's excited to be performing songs from the album during the upcoming tour. "It's going to be great to celebrate this anniversary with my fans," said Glover. "There's nothing better than performing an intimate show and seeing up close and personal how these songs still resonate with the audience." As a founding member of Living Color, Corey helped prove that not only could black guys kick out the jams, but they could be embraced by a vast expanse of fans. Living Color earned numerous industry awards, including back-to-back Grammys for Best Hard Rock Performance of 1989, Cult of Personality, and 1990 Time's Up, and emerged as one of the most influential rock acts of all time, regularly selling out arenas and selling millions of albums. Glover has been called a true Renaissance man. He not only fronts Living Color, who will be heading back on tour later this year to continue to promote their latest album, Shade, which peaked at number 12 on the Billboard charts, but he's also an accomplished actor. He has appeared in such films as Platoon and has starred in various television roles. Corey also played Judas opposite Ted Neely in the national tour of Jesus Christ Superstar, and has been seen in productions of Godspell and Fallen Angel. Please welcome singer, songwriter, musician, actor, musically best known as the lead vocalist of the rock band Living Color, vocalist for the funk band Galactic, also known as Reverend Daddy Love, Corey Glover to the Ray Shasho Show. Hello, Corey.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you very much.
Okay. Why were you ordained as the Reverend Daddy Love?
It speaks to my personality. My maternal grandfather was a Jack Lake preacher, which is sort of like rode the rails and got up on a soapbox and preached the word. And my mother explained to me what he did at one point, and it's like, oh, like me as a musician. like I just travel from place to place and do what I do. So I kind of dubbed myself the right Reverend Daddy Love.
I think it's awesome.
Thank you.
It's a great title. Now, your song Sermon from Hymns, was that kind of from that background as well?
It was paying a little homage to that, you know, particularly because, you know, at one point, the idea of what rock and roll was very much tied to its R&B and gospel roots.
Mm-hmm.
trying to bridge that gap.
Right. Well, you know, definitely rock and roll came from the old blues guys from way back when.
Absolutely.
I really got into, as a matter of fact, it was Maria Muldaur, I believe, that turned me on to Memphis Millie. You remember Memphis Millie?
Yeah.
She was one of the first women that played electric guitar, actually. And
there's a bunch of like Sister Rosetta Tharpe, who was a gospel artist more than anything else, but played a mean guitar.
You know, unfortunately, a lot of those artists back then didn't get the credit that they deserved. You know, I hate to say this, but Led Zeppelin ripped off a lot of those guys back in the day.
Oh yeah, well, you know, Willie Dixon's whole songbook is basically is Led Zeppelin, and I mean, he in the 70s he did sue them for appropriating some of his music, and unfortunately he did not win anything. But you know, there was it's everything can be traced back to the blues. Any kind of music you can think of, that any kind of popular music, including hip hop, can be traced back to the blues. So
everything came from the blues, and you know, of course, Elvis was a big in gospel, and it's probably
big in gospel. Yeah. Big blues guy too. He, you know, it was said that, you know, because he was from Tupelo, and that those guys, B.B. King was a major influence on him, and you know, there's a bunch of blues artists that Elvis was very much, you know, a fan of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would have liked to hear a all blues album by Elvis. That would have been pretty cool.
That would have been great.
That would have been great. I want to mention some of the dates you got coming up. You'll be in, is it Media, PA, April 15th?
Yeah, this Sunday we'll be in Media. It's just outside of Philadelphia.
April 21st in Buffalo. You'll be in Buffalo.
Right.
Back in Rochester, April 27th. Marlborough, New York on the 28th. Coney Island, really, Coney Island on the 29th. Cool. Then I'm assuming you got a lot more shows that haven't been announced yet, right?
Absolutely. We're in the midst of trying to nail down a bunch of shows right now.
Are you guys going to travel overseas at all?
I'd like to. I don't know if we're going to do it on this go round, but I'd like to.
But let me tell you, the Hymns album, which was your first solo album, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. I really liked it. My favorite song, probably a lot of people's song, was Only Time Will Tell, which was beautiful song. And also One was also another beautiful track on that album.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, man, you're a fantastic singer. You are awesome.
Well, thank you.
Know, you don't see guys like you anymore, you know, out on the mainstream.
It's just hard to find them sometimes, yeah.
Nobody with your talent, though. You know, you can do it all. I mean, you can do any genre if you want, which is really cool.
It's the way to do it. You got to keep yourself. You got to know where you are and all the things you can do.
Also on the album, you know, you got a lot of beautiful tunes there. Then you come out with "Do You First, Then Do Myself," which was kind of a rocker. You know, I really enjoyed that one. Yeah, and then "Lowball Express," which reminded me a lot of Marvin Gaye.
Well, yeah, it was trying to do like more like a Curtis Mayfield kind of thing, like in doing that. But yeah, we had some really great tunes on that record.
Actually, my first concert back in, I think it was 71, was Curtis Mayfield.
It was
back when he was doing Superfly.
Yeah. Well, that's what we were coming from with Lowball.
I really like that album. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, a friend of mine who was a director had a movie he was doing, this little indie film he's calling called Lowball, mm-hmm. and that's where the song basically came from. It was me trying to really try to capture that that Curtis Mayfield Superfly kind of thing.
Those were the good old days. I'm a big fan of R&B. I was born in Baltimore, but I was raised in D.C. And, you know, R&B in D.C. was huge, man. And
absolutely.
My dad had a store.
And all that other stuff. I'm sorry?
My dad had a store on F Street in D.C., and two doors down was the Lowe's Palace, which had shows like the Shy Lights and Stylistics and James Brown. And my dad was in, he had drinks with Al Green in his dressing room. I mean, it was, you know, it was a good time, really good time for music, you know.
Absolutely.
I'd like to see you do a duet with Sade.
That'd be interesting. That'd be very, very interesting.
I think you guys would mesh well together.
Yeah. A friend of mine, I'm really good friends with Sam Moore. I was dating his daughter, and we've been talking about doing some stuff as well.
You know, Sade's got such, what a great band she's always had, you know, supporting her.
Amazing band.
And I really miss her. You know, I guess when she had kids, she kind of, you know, dropped off the radar.
Yeah, I think she's putting out a new record soon, actually.
I hope she's
scheduled to put out something relatively new really soon, so look forward to that.
She's got so much talent, you know. She's incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, she's amazing.
Do you ever think about doing a duets album?
That'd be great. It'd be great. Yeah, I'd love to do a duets record.
I mean, I could see you doing that. That's, you know, like a no-brainer.
Yeah, it'd be great.
You were born in Brooklyn, which is cool. I got a lot of family in Brooklyn. My dad was born in Bensonhurst. He's in Bensonhurst area. I'm very familiar with that area. A lot of great people came from that turf.
Yeah, I'm from Crown Heights.
Crown Heights,
Yeah, and born and raised, and, you know, dyed-in-the-wool Brooklynite and New Yorker.
Yeah, I can tell a little bit of New York accent in you.
Every now and then it comes out, yeah.
It comes out, right? Well, when did you know you had such an incredible singing voice? When did it all start?
Well, to be honest with you, it was an attempt at sibling rivalry. my older brother is very much an amazing singer.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was trying to emulate him, basically, and trying to do what he did. And he was, you know, he sang in the church, and, you know, various sort of R&B groups that never really got out of, you know, the basement and that kind of stuff. So I was trying to do what he did. And my sister was an actress.
Really?
So I was trying to be like... Just following in their footsteps.
And I think your mom's a singer too, right?
No. My parents, they've long since passed away, but they weren't much singers. They weren't much of entertainment. My mother was a special ed teacher, and my father was a tax assessor for the city of New York. So.
Oh, okay.
They had no aspirations for any musical kind of aspirations.
Did they encourage you guys, you and your brother?
Absolutely. They made sure that we had the ability to do all this stuff, and they gave us a very good platform for that. So I can't thank them enough.
Now does your brother sing professionally, and does your sister, is she an actress or anything?
No, they're you know, my brother and sister are like almost 10 years older than I am. I'm sort of like a mistake. and they're both retired now. So
baby brother is the one that made it. I love it.
Right.
I'm the youngest of my family too, so I love to hear those stories.
Yeah, the way they told it, I was the golden child.
The golden child.
I got treated like with kid gloves. My excuse was they were too old to run after me, so that's what that was about.
Yeah. You know what song? No one else has done this song, this cover song, better than you, and that's Imagine by John Lennon. Oh, my goodness gracious. You know, I saw it on YouTube. I guess it was a cut from the 1996 Rhythm of the Games album for the Olympic Games.
Yeah, it was for the Olympics, yeah. And I was at the time on LaFace Records, which is based out of Atlanta. And Atlanta was hosting the Summer Games that year, and they did the soundtrack for that, and we did it, and I was tasked to do Imagine.
Man, you nailed it.
Thank you.
You really did. I never heard anybody sing it as good.
Yeah, it's funny because critics didn't like it because I wasn't.
You're kidding me.
It wasn't favorably received.
You know what? Critics and music today suck. That's the truth. Anything on mainstream radio, like on terrestrial radio, they don't know what they're doing anymore. They really suck.
Well,
you know? It's the truth.
Well, that could be said about so many things over the years. You know,
right?
That music that you find later on in life, and people were not really hearing it or really checking for it, is now, you know, classics in some people's eyes, you know.
Yeah, well, you should be on mainstream radio. All your stuff, you know, your solo stuff and with the group, you know.
Well, we'd like to rectify that somehow, but we'll see.
We'll see, right? I hope things change. I really do, because there's a lot of legends out there that, I mean, they can't get the record deals they get today are very independent record labels.
Well,
the
advent of the internet has made getting music and finding music that much more easy, I think.
Right.
So you can find anything that you want, and not necessarily have to go to a record company to get it. And that sort of makes record companies somewhat obsolete in a certain way. Like, you can go on Spotify, you can go on Tidal, you can go to Pandora, any places, and independent artists can put their music up there, and you can find it, and you can find whatever it is you're looking for. If it's something specific you're looking for, it can be found.
But it's tough to sell your music like the old days, right?
Yeah, well, it just means that you have to tour a little bit more than you used to, because you're never going to get record sales are a thing of the past,
right?
Really?
Yeah, I miss those days. I really do. Yeah.
Things change slowly but surely. They change.
Yep, you're right. It could come back. Why not?
Yeah.
You were influenced heavy growing up by Miles Davis, right? Like from Bitches Brew and
Bitches Brew was Bitches Brew was a seminal record in my house. So was Santana, the Beatles. So was Jimi Hendrix. So was the Jacksons, and there was a bunch of, like, we had a lot. There was a lot of music playing. So it was. Bill Withers, all those kind of things were a part of my growing up.
Yep.
And the part of what I do is based on that really good music that was playing in my house.
Well, thank God your parents knew great music, and then, you know, they weren't playing like Mitch Miller or something.
Right. It was a godsend to be able to really hear really insightful music, because, you know, think about it, you know, as I said, my brother and sister are older than I was, so they had their music that they were listening to, and then there was the music my parents were listening to, and there was the music that they sort of connected on, and Miles Davis's Bitches Brew was one of those records that they both, all parties sort of, like, agreed upon. Like, that was the record that record everybody agreed upon, as well as the Santana record that everybody sort of, like, yeah, I get it, you know, because there's a lot of jazz influence, and my parents listened to a lot of jazz.
Yep.
My brother and sister were listening to a lot of R&B and jazz fusion and that kind of stuff, and listening to what is his name? Oh man, I'm completely blanking. Herbie Hancock and Headhunters and that kind of stuff. So there was a bunch of music that was that I got a chance to listen here, which I'm very, very grateful for.
Yeah, you had a nice eclectic mix of music. That's why you're
absolutely. And
so
and
good
you know,
yeah.
This is a time of New York radio when FM radio was really king, and you could hear all kinds of stuff on the radio. That was the beginning of the whole album-oriented rock records, and you could hear whole album sides on the radio. How often can you do that now? You know.
Yeah. Yeah, New York and in Maryland, D.C., Philly, that hub there was great. It was awesome. Great for concerts, music, the whole. Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm so glad I grew up there. You know, the band that you're also with, Galactic, is a great jam band, man. They're awesome.
Yes.
You know,
amazing.
They're amazing. And, you know, the song Going Down Slowly. You know, it kind of reminded me of Steve Winwood and Traffic a little bit, you know?
Absolutely. They're a great band. It's a really, really, really good band. And they have, you know, they also are sort of like connoisseurs of music. Like they and their musical taste, I think that's very much a New Orleans sort of thing, where they're not limited to a particular space musically. Like, They know as much, you know, New Orleans music as they know R&B, as they know rock music, as they know metal music, as they know punk music. You know, they're a very interesting band. It's very, you know, they remind me very much of Living Color in that.
Yep.
We have a bunch of real musical aficionados, people who actually.
It's a very talented band, you know. I mean,
that's
another thing you don't get on. Yeah, that's another thing you don't get on mainstream radio. You don't hear that talent anymore. You don't hear the lead guitar player, you know, the rock star thing. You don't hear these guys, you know, playing great instruments like that anymore. You know, you did. I loved Heart of Steel from them. And was it Let's Do It Together? Is that the where you did that kind of Wilson Pickett scream?
Yeah. That's actually, you know, that's a cover.
Yep.
A bunch of the stuff I did with them were covers. So, yeah. But, you know, they, like I said, they're very much aficionados of old school rock music, old school R&B music. They're really good bunch of guys, real good bunch of guys.
They're incredible. They really are. Well, I got to ask you, talk about the inception of Cult of Personality. How did that all come about? I know all you guys wrote that, right? Was it a little bit of writing from the whole band? Or
a little bit of things from everybody. We were, you know, we had a rehearsal space in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And we'd go in and just sort of write and rehearse there, and I was trying to show Vernon this riff I had in my head.
Right.
And the riff turned out to be that first riff from Cult Personality, and Vernon had a notebook full of songs and full of lyrics, and you know he was fascinated with the whole idea of that. Stalin was talking about Marx and that he had a cult of personality, and that he was, that who he was and what he was sort of deified, and that idea of creating the hero and creating the legend.
Right.
And that's what we were trying to get at, you know, that everybody's story, you know, and the whole idea that, like Andy Warhol said, that everybody's going to have their own 15 minutes of fame at some point.
Right.
And and just talking about that whole idea.
Oh, it's an incredible tune, and the video is also awesome.
Thank you.
yeah, that's a song that's going to live on forever. You know, it's just one of those. Well, I guess as long as
people, you know, turn your favorites into, you know, legends at some point, then of course that a song like that and an idea like that's going to exist.
Sure, it's already legendary.
Right.
You won a Grammy Award and Best Hard Rock Performance in 1990 for that song.
Mm-hmm.
I want to read a couple of awards, you guys. In 89, Best New Artist, Cult of Personality. 89, Best Group Video for Cult of Personality. Best Stage mm-hmm. Performance, also.
What kind of performance? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Best Hard Rock Performance, Cult of Personality, right. 1990 for Grammy Awards. Best Rock right. Performance by a duo or a group with vocal nominated. Best right. Hard Rock Performance and Time's Up. And also 94, Best Hard Rock Performance, you were nominated for Leave It Alone. So, right. Man, you got a pretty good history there of winning stuff.
Or at least being nominated for stuff, which is good.
I want to talk about Shade, man. I want to tell you, you got to be proud of this album. It just blew me away. I gave it 5 stars all the way. If I could give it more, I would. Oh, my goodness gracious. I mean, blew me away. It was an incredible album.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It was definitely a labor of love. We spent a great deal of time trying to perfect it and get it right. And get it to where we wanted it, and really get our point across, which took some doing.
Yeah,
you know,
it helps to have like a Jimi Hendrix in the band, huh? With Vernon.
Well, it also hinders because you know they're perfectionist guitar players.
Right.
So you know you want to get it right, and believe me, there are. The Jimi Hendrix of any particular instrument is in this band. Will Calhoun is one of the most amazing drummers I've known, and a hard act to follow in terms of finding somebody else that plays as well as him. And Doug Wimbish mm-hmm. is just phenomenal. Is an amazing, amazing player, musician, songwriter. You know, Doug's whole pedigree, like Doug. Is basically one of the progenitors of hip-hop. You know, he mm-hmm. started out working at Sugar Hill Records, and a lot of classic hip-hop songs is Doug playing bass on them. You know, so there's a band full of monster
superstars.
Musicians.
Yeah, a band full of
Absolutely.
Superstars, really. You got 10 originals and 3 covers, right, on the album.
Right, mm-hmm.
And, you know, it started Freedom of Expression, which is a kick-ass track, a real rocker all mm-hmm. the way. Great song. I really, really liked your cover of Robert Johnson's Preachin' Blues. Wow.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
You did that at the Apollo, right, for the 100th anniversary of Robert Johnson?
Yeah, that's how the whole project sort of started.
Right.
Like we were doing the 100th anniversary of the birth of Robert Johnson, and we were at that point in time we were all sort of spread out doing other things. I was working with Galactic, and other guys in the band were doing other things, and we were asked to do this thing, this Robert Johnson thing, and so we sort of rehearsed and worked up the song at soundcheck in the mm-hmm. dressing room. And the way that Preachin' Blues came about sounded so good to us that we were like, why don't we make a record that pays homage to the blues?
Right.
You know, it's the thing that brought us all here, like I was saying earlier. Everything that you can think of can be traced back to the blues. Let's try to see what we can come up with. Our interpretation of what the blues sounds like, and that's how Shade came about.
What a fantastic song, man! It was incredible.
Well, thank you.
Excellent. Come On had some awesome guitar, some weird effects in that, right, in that track?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What were those effects, anyway, on that album, on that track?
It is basically just, you know, studio magic and guitar players losing their minds, basically, is what that's about.
I loved it. It was really different.
Thanks. But that's what basically what the song, you know, and, you know, this just, all the stuff just came about in the studio. We just basically sat in the studio and thought about, you know, the idea of the progression of the blues and how many different progressions of the blues there are,
mm-hmm.
and how interesting that idea is to really come up with that kind of thing and really give that thing a chance, you know. So,
you know, when I read about you being a Renaissance man, it's true, man. You got so much music in your head. I mean, you got rock and roll, you've got jazz, you got the blues, a little gospel.
Yeah,
it's all in there. You can do it. You can do it all.
It's all
hip hop. Yeah,
all there to be had.
A very controversial song, "Who Shot You," which is by mm-hmm. Notorious B.I.G. cover, because mm-hmm. I guess Tupac did a song called "Hit 'Em Up" as a response to that
right.
song, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, the song is an allegory of the blues to me,
mm-hmm.
and the story of Christopher Wallace, Notorious B.I.G., Biggie, whatever you want to call him.
Right.
Was, you know, the adage of living by the sword and dying by the sword. But we really wanted to talk about gun violence
mm-hmm.
and that
right.
how it's proliferating our culture, and we hate to be right in a situation like this, but you know that's what's happening here.
Yeah.
That we seem to be just inundated with the idea that the solution to any problem is a gun, and the problem that brings, that to know that the gun is not the solution, that
right.
violence has never been the solution,
yeah.
that you know we have a. We need to figure out how to make what we are less about a confrontation
mm-hmm.
and more of a dialogue.
Right.
And that's often where, you know, it always seems to be the punctuation, the end of a sentence.
Yeah.
Like, well, if that doesn't work, you know, we could always do this. And that's not the answer either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I understand perfectly. Look, Baltimore is like one of the, you know, worst cities in the United States with violence now. And when I was in D.C., working in D.C.,
yeah,
capital of the world at one time.
Yeah, you know, the violence that exists around the world,
mm-hmm.
and when I say the solution is a bigger gun,
yeah.
That's also drone strikes. That's also,
oh my goodness,
you know, that's also chemical weapons. That's also,
yeah,
just, you know, that destruction is not the answer.
Right.
That the idea of that you need to do these sort of things in order to make yourself feel better or make yourself feel right is part of the problem.
Mhm. Yeah, Edwin Starr said it right. You know, war. What is it good for? You know.
Mhm.
It's
absolutely
very, very true. I don't know how we're going to stop it. I mean, like the Middle East is going to go on forever. There'll never be peace there. I don't think.
Right.
You know.
Well, I don't think. It's funny because I could say the same about America. It's hard to look at this world and think, yeah, it's going to get better sometime. And then, you know that it's going to keep going. It's going to keep that the world is going to keep going. But what are you bringing to it? Are you bringing construction or destruction?
That's right.
Really is a question that you have to ask yourself. Why? What do you bring to the table? And what are you bringing that's going to make things better in this world? And that should only thing. I mean, you look at the again. Look at the gun violence proliferating this country.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the divisions that exist in this country. You look at the greed and the avarice of this world, and it's like, why are you doing? Why is this more important than raising a child?
Right.
Why are those things more important than making this place better than the way you left it?
Mm-hmm. And we're only here for such a short time. I mean, life is going by.
Absolutely.
Like, it's crazy. The cool thing about the '60s is they had music that put a lot of people at peace. They really did. Mm.
Well, that's the one thing that you can look at. Music is a part of your life. I mean, everybody can look at a piece of music and think about the time and how seminal that piece of music is to your life. That first song that you heard when you got your first kiss, the first song you heard when you realized where you were in this world, the first song you heard when you saw made you see the world differently. And some people think that music is disposable. Music is, or art is disposable. It's just something that you can look at and listen to for a short period of time and then throw it away. But music is much more important than that. And we have to really take that idea that we're, like you said, we're only here for a short period of time.
Right.
Let's make it beautiful. Let's surround ourselves with beauty as opposed to mayhem.
I agree 100%, man. I agree with you. And unfortunately, I'm very much against smartphones. I think that took a lot away from people just, being sociable and
Technology is designed to convenience you into a state of internal sort of put you in the internal as opposed to the external.
Right.
It makes you want to stay in the house. It makes you not want to stay outside and enjoy the sunshine.
I agree.
In some cases, it does help you. It should help. It shouldn't be your life.
Yeah, that's true. Some of the other tracks on your album, Always Wrong, a little bit of, I also hear a little bit of progressive rock in some of the stuff you do, especially in that song.
All that stuff is blues-based. If you listen to stuff like Emerson, Lake & Palmer or even Pink Floyd and that kind of stuff, all that stuff is blues-based.
It is.
All of it is blues-based.
Yeah. Aren't a little bit of Peter Gabriel like in that song, a little bit of Linkin Park too.
Mm-hmm.
I always associate songs with other artists for some reason. I don't know why.
Right.
Blackout was a very cool track. I can hear Jimi Hendrix doing that one.
Yeah.
That'd be a great Hendrix song.
Again, it was. If you listen to some of the stuff that Bo Diddley was doing, or if you listen to some of the earlier recordings of Big Mama Thornton and that kind of stuff, it sounded like Blackout to me.
Yeah. It's amazing how it all comes back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Who's That? Great blues beginning. Right. Then it sounded like kind of like a Lucille. It had that Lucille riff,
Yeah, well, it kind of again it devolved into something It was sort of like my homage to our homage to like that New Orleans kind of thing, mm-hmm. and we had Big Sam, who's a major blues artist. I mean, a jam band guy from New Orleans on the track.
Mm-hmm.
It was trying to give our interpretation of the blues as we hear it.
Glass Teeth, you went back into metal on that one. It sounded like a metal
right.
track. Go ahead.
Glass Teeth was sort of, Vernon and I were talking, and the whole idea of status in class, that
mm-hmm.
What's going to be the next status symbol?
Right.
And I said something about, glass teeth. And like, let's do it. Let's write a song about it.
Great song.
And the whole idea that status is an entity that lives inside your head. That you have to be better than. You have to get that self improvement is about
yep.
how other people see you and not how you see you.
Right. Invisible, which to me a little
mm-hmm.
bit of Cream there. Sound like Jack Bruce, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear your influences, man. It's amazing,
Oh, yeah, well,
music.
Vernon was on the road with Jack just before he passed away. And so there was a connection
yep.
there to that.
I interviewed Jack before he passed away, too. He's a funny guy. He was a very funny guy.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of underrated sometimes. I don't know.
Absolutely. I agree. I completely agree. You don't realize how much of an influence he was on that whole thing, and
yep.
particularly when he was in Cream. And I mean, again, this is a band full of monster musicians.
Yeah.
It's not just that that Eric Clapton is in the band, but Ginger Baker is an amazing,
mm-hmm.
amazing
drummer
and musician. And the three of them were just incredible people and incredible
yeah.
musicians, and it's hard to think that all three of those guys were all together in the same band.
Yep. And Jack wrote most of the music,
Exactly.
Great songwriter. He wrote most of the music. He did a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He worked with a lot of people. Yep,
yeah.
I'm sad to see him go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Inner City Blues, a Marvin Gaye cover. Being from D.C., Marvin Gaye's from D.C.
Mm-hmm.
originally. I love Marvin Gaye.
Absolutely.
You did an excellent job covering that tune. I'd love to hear you do Mercy, Mercy, because, on that track, that the end of Mercy, Mercy kind of sounds a little bit psychedelic. You kind of lose
mm-hmm.
yourself, and you get mesmerized
right.
by that. You guys would kill that,
sort of,
man.
It's sort of a jazz vibe to it. Yeah,
it was so cool. He was another amazing man. Did you
Absolutely.
Know he was a good drummer, too? Really good drummer.
He's an amazing drummer. He was a drummer
yeah.
before he was a singer.
Yeah.
If not for the fact that his singer didn't show up for the session, you wouldn't have known that, because he was a drummer on the session, and they needed somebody to sing, and he's like, I'll do it.
He was so cool. It's so tragic what happened, it's
Absolutely.
So tragic. So many people had some really tragic endings, which is a real shame.
Right.
I was watching the Jackie Wilson, listen to mm. his story, and, it's so sad these guys die so young,
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I love the album, man. And on Two Sides, by the way, you killed it. Great vocals. I mean,
you've
got to be probably my favorite singer right now.
Well, I hope I'm somebody's favorite singer.
What track was George Clinton was on one of these tracks, wasn't he?
On Two Sides. Yeah, he's on Two Sides.
He's on Two Sides. Okay.
Yeah.
I saw the Funkadelics in 1973 in Baltimore. It was actually
wow.
Rare Earth, the Funkadelics, the Ohio Players, and a band called
wow.
Leadhead. Back in 73, the Ohio Players, I think they just came out with Funky Worm. That was before they got real big.
Right.
And I remember the Funkadelics doing, I think they did Cosmic Slop, and they had the the spaceship come down. I think George Clinton was the one in diapers, did he, you know, came out in diapers. What a wild concert, man. But I admire, you know, those bands, they were so talented, you know. I mean, like the Ohio Players with the horn section, you know. Just
you
incredible.
Know, and they modeled themselves after rock bands and old school R&B bands. So, you know, they were really, you know, innovative, really, really innovative.
Just
incredible.
Know,
the players that were in that band, I mean, in both bands, in Ohio Players and in Parliament Funkadelic, it was just, just incredible.
Amazing.
You know, Bernie Worrell, just an amazing keyboard player. All that stuff, a lot of that music is, you can look for, with particularly P-Funk is, you know, you can see it's Bernie doing these sounds and making these sounds and playing this music is just ridiculous.
Yeah. George Clinton was so innovative. He was kind of like the Frank Zappa of funk.
Exactly.
You know,
it's exactly what he was. And was doing it forever, and had been doing it for, and still doing it, you know.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to you about too. You did a song called Middleman, and was that actually from a suicide note? Some of the lyrics from that.
It was a note I'd written to myself, just about not wanting to be in the middle of anything anymore.
Right.
And. It was just about, you know, feeling isolated and desperate and just felt set upon, basically. And I was trying to wrestle with it.
Right.
And I had decided that I was writing this note saying, you know, I'm not going to be it. I was writing it to whomever, probably my parents or whatever it was. I was young when I wrote it. I don't want to be in the middle of your madness. I don't want to be in the middle of all the things that that you're putting me in. I don't want to be in that anymore. I don't want to be. I'm tired of being that. And luckily, while writing this, it sort of worked out. You know, it's not bad being there. It's a very good vantage point to be in.
How did you come out of all that?
I'm still here. you know, and I'm talking to a ghost, so I guess it worked.
I've got my best friend actually committed suicide, and really shocked the hell out of me because, you know, we didn't really see it coming, you know, and I used to talk to him every single day, and, you know, it's just sad, you know, that people get that so depressed they want to end their lives.
It's a tough place.
Tough place to be, right? I wanted to talk about the Black Rock Coalition.
Yes.
Now this is interesting, very interesting, because I know where you're coming from, and it's mainly, I think, some of the, you know, like the music execs and things like that just don't get it, because, you know, back in my day we had bands like the Chambers Brothers. You know, who did psychedelic, you know. We had, you know, Jimi Hendrix. Buddy Miles he was a rocker.
Well, Buddy Buddy, another amazing, amazing individual. Love Buddy. That's what, to me, that's what Invisible was about.
Mm-hmm.
It was paying homage to Buddy and his kind of thing. That was straight, like, Buddy Miles was the most amazing, amazing musician. And, you know, multi-instrumentalist and incredible, just incredible.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't know what a good guitar player the guy was. He was an incredible guitar player.
An amazing guitar player. Guitar player.
Yep.
You know, amazing keyboard player. Like he sit in front of a piano and just play incredible things.
Yep. He was one of my heroes for sure. Him, Hendrix. You know, Sly and the Family Stone, I love. Very sad, you know, about Sly and his drug issue. But
right.
what an intelligent man. The same thing, you know. He's like George Clinton. He had that mind, that musical
right.
mind, you know. By the way, here's another song I want you to do. If You Want Me to Stay by Sly. You got to do that. That's such
a
hip tune.
It's a
hip tune, man. I talked recently also Cindy Blackman Santana. She's a rocker. She played
Absolutely.
With Lenny Kravitz, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she's really into not Cindy, Nona Hendrix. I interviewed her too. She's a big Captain Beefheart fan. Which
yes, she was.
Me away.
Yes, she
yeah.
is. Yes, she is. She's. I love Nona. Nona is just amazing. Sings like a bird and really musical ideas. Constantly has new musical ideas in her head. She's amazing, amazing person and just beautiful, beautiful soul.
Corey, duet.
we've done some duets live.
Oh, have you? Have you really?
Never recording it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've never recorded them. Yeah.
She's such a hip lady, though. You know, she still looks great. She's, you know, very attractive. She's hip.
Absolutely.
Which I like. You know, she was the coolest LaBelle. I mean, I love the way she, you know, she was like the space lady, I think, in LaBelle.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and they're all from, you know, again, you know. Patty's from Philly.
Yep.
They're all from, you know, they're all from that Northeast corridor kind of thing.
Yep.
Know?
So cool. Here's a guy you should talk to. I don't know, maybe you know him, Bicky Womack.
I do not know him.
He's Bobby Womack's nephew.
Okay.
And he's like you. He's a rocker. You know,
right.
he grew up with a lot of the same guys that you like, and he's got a new album coming out. He just sent it to me. Nice guy.
Okay.
But just check out
some of his
music. He's a guitar player.
Okay. I'll definitely
check out some of his stuff on YouTube. He's on YouTube. But, you know, Bobby Womack has a, you know, he was another great player.
Oh, my God. The Womack brothers, all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The Womack clan is just a bunch of really Cecil... All of them, amazing, amazing, amazing players,
yep.
amazing musicians, amazing songwriters. You know, they came. The Womack brothers came out of, you know, Sam Cooke's camp,
exactly.
along with Lou Rawls. You know,
exactly.
And they went all over the place. I mean, they did a lot of R&B stuff, but Womack to Womack was another one. A thing that was Cecil, and some really interesting stuff that came out of that. There's a really good, some really interesting things came from that idea. And to think that it started with Sam Cooke,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, Bicky told me he had so many great stories about growing up around in the household with all these famous people dropping in. And one of them was Sam Cooke. When
right,
he got
you know,
to
I was just talking to, you know, we do sometimes do these shows with... the Experience Hendrix organization
mm-hmm.
and Ernie Isley.
Oh, yeah.
The Isley brothers. Again, amazing. But Ernie was talking about how Jimmy came to live with him in Teaneck, New Jersey because he was in the band because he was in the Isley brothers band early on with Twist and Shout and all that other stuff. And, you know, he was, you know, Jimi Hendrix lived in your parents' house with you. And you're like 14 years old. Come on.
You're jamming in the basement.
Exactly. Who's that? Oh, that's just Jimmy.
I think it was Ernie Isley was on the Santana album, the last one.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, Cindy told
Ernie
me that.
Is amazing. Ernie is amazing.
Well, the other part of you, you're an actor. Are you still doing any acting
yes.
parts?
Yes. Every now and then I get a role for something.
Right.
I haven't been doing much lately because I'm kind of concentrating on the music right now. But
right.
eventually I'll get some other stuff going.
What do you think of, I know you were in Jesus Christ Superstar. You were
mm-hmm.
Judas. What'd you think of the performance, the live TV show that had, was it Brandon Victor Dixon, I guess, was Judas? What'd you think of his role?
It was good. I did it with Ted Neely, who was in the movie with Carl Anderson.
Yeah,
Carl
he
Anderson
was awesome.
Is another big influence on me. And Jesus Christ Superstar, the show itself, was a major influence on my life. Like, my parents took me to see the movie when I was a kid, and it changed my life because I saw a black guy singing rock music. Damn for All Time is one of my favorite songs of all time. So there is... So to be on stage with Ted Neely was... Whew, it was intense.
Was cool. That was incredible. Yeah, I did. I interviewed Ian Gillan, from Deep Purple. He was the original Jesus on the album, on the Jesus Christ Superstar album. Yeah, but you guys all started in church. Even Ian Gillan started. He's a Catholic, and he started in the choir. Everyone starts in the choir and ends up in rock and roll.
Right. Well, all that singing for God. It's the same thing. You're just doing the same. It's just a little different. Just a little different.
But what was it like being Francis in Platoon? I mean, you had a lot of heavyweights in that movie.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because when we first got there, we're all all working actors. We shot that in the Philippines. And we all flew in. We all didn't know each other. And, Charlie Sheen, we knew Sheen through his father. We didn't know him as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Depp was just starting out. Willem Dafoe and Tom Berenger were the real stars of it, of that sort of thing. But, Forrest Whitaker is in that. There's a bunch of folks that came out of there that went on to do some really interesting things. So,
yeah.
It makes me think if I step to the acting thing, who knows where I'd be right now?
That's true. That is true.
Because
I
went right out of doing Platoon into Living Color, which wasn't a bad thing to do, but it makes you think about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of rock guys that are also actors, of course. Bowie, Mick Jagger. I just interviewed Michael DeBar, who was in Silverhead and Detective, and he was Murdoch in MacGyver, the bad guy. And he just came back for another role with the new MacGyver, and he was telling me because he got killed at the end. And I says, "Man, I was disappointed you got killed." He says, "When have you ever seen Murdoch get killed?" So he kind of tipped it off that he's coming back.
Right.
I think it's pretty cool. Here's a question I ask everybody, Corey. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Interesting. Well, all my faves, all the folks that that I mentioned, past and present. I'd want to be in the room with Elvis. It's strange, but I was a real big Elvis fan. I really liked, I thought what he did was incredible. And an amazing singer. Amazing singer.
That was rock and roll back then. I mean, Little Richard, Chuck Berry, that's the real rock and roll. And then we got into rock,
Right.
But that was the real rock and roll back in the late, I guess, late 50s, mid to late 50s. Yeah. Those are some good old guys back then. They were incredible.
Yeah.
Corey, you have anything else for me? Anything else you like to promote? Anything coming up? We got your tour. It's going to expand. Everyone can go on your website to keep track of that. Do you have a website? I know you have a Facebook account.
It's a Facebook page. Just go.
It's a Facebook page, right?
Yeah, just go check the Facebook page. It should be all that stuff there. And also on Instagram, it's all there.
And you're on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. The Facebook page is www.facebook.com/CoreyGloverMusic, correct?
Exactly.
And you can also go on, well, you got a webpage for Living Color, which is www.livingcolor.com, so they can check that out. I'm really excited about both tours, actually, and I hope you come to Florida, man.
Oh, definitely. We're going to be in West Palm, I think, next month.
In West Palm, okay.
Yeah.
That's on the other side. I'm on the east, on the West Coast, like Tampa, the Tampa area.
Yeah.
So, well, I'll keep track. If you're in the area, I'll make sure we could go see you, and we'll do a review and cover the show and everything.
Absolutely. That'd be great. Thanks a lot.
Corey, it's been great talking to you, man. I love all your music, and I'm a big fan. And I don't know what else to say about it. They need to go out, and they need to buy Shade, and they need to buy Hymns, which was your first solo album from 1998. And we're looking for great stuff. Thank you so much for being on the show and for all the incredible music, man. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for listening, man. Appreciate
sure.
it.
Sure. Thank you, Corey.
Anytime.
All right, man. God bless you.
All right. Bless you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. For further information about Corey Glover, please visit www.facebook.com/CoreyGloverMusic or visit Corey Glover on Twitter, www.twitter.com/RevDaddyLove. Also visit www.livingcolor.com. Purchase Living Color's latest release, Shade, at Amazon.com. Also, Corey Glover's 1998 debut solo album entitled Hymns, also at Amazon.com. Very special thanks to Denise, CEO of DMK Publicity, for arranging this interview with Corey Glover, and of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of The Ray Shasho Show. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at theRayShashoShow@gmail.com. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, or the second edition, Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available now at Amazon.com. You will live it. Have a...
Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on PBS Radio Station 1.